Chapter 4. I walked up the beach and soon came to a dwelling. The rooms had stone walls and thatched roofs. This accommodation had not been constructed by a skilled builder, but it was better than nothing. The brown-haired man came out of the building at the same time as Montgomery caught up with me. "Well, what do we do with our uninvited guest?" the man asked. He was talking to Montgomery and not to me. "I've been thinking the same myself," Montgomery replied. The two men talked over my head as if I weren't there. I felt like a small child. Even though I had eaten the biscuits, I was still weak and exhausted. I couldn't easily concentrate on what they said. "You see, I'm very keen to get back to my work again," the man said.
"I'm sure you are," Montgomery replied.
"So we can't send him there," the man said, looking at one of the buildings. It was the one with caged animals by the front door.
"No, not there," Montgomery said.
"And we can't spare the time to build a new room.
Not while I'm working.
And we can't trust him with our work just yet, can we?" the man asked.
"It's up to you," I said quietly.
"I thought the same," said Montgomery.
"How about that room of mine, with the door which locks?"
"Yes, that'll do," the brown-haired man said. Then he looked at me.
"I'm sure you understand, Mr. Prendick. It's delicate work. Although you are a man of biology, I'm sure you understand that we can't trust you just yet. It's our little secret, you see. We can't trust you because we don't know you."
"Of course," I said. "I'm not offended. I'd think the same myself." I was too weak to really understand what they were talking about. Also, I didn't have any other option. I was completely helpless and pleased to be offered anywhere to stay. Anything was better than waiting to die in that horrid dinghy. The brown-haired man stomped toward the caged animals. Montgomery pointed to a door and unlocked it for me. We stepped inside. The room was small and quite dark. He lit a lamp and told me to sit down. It had basic furniture, a small bed and a bookshelf, and next to the bed, there was another door. I wondered if it led into a bathroom and tried to open the door, but Montgomery stopped me.
"That's off limits," he said.
"It's an interior door, and those rooms belong to him." He nodded his head out of the small window. We could see the old man. He was busy looking at the crates and cages. I was tired and sat in the wooden chair again, which creaked under my weight. "I'd better go and help him. Can you please stay here and not have any trouble?"
"My man will bring some food for you," Montgomery said.
Not long after, Emling knocked quietly on the door and came in with a tray of simple food and drink. He was polite as he gave me the tray and trained like a good servant. He bowed as he left the room. As he leant forward, I noticed something that made me gasp. I have already said how this black-faced creature, Emling, has an unusual appearance. His face somehow resembles a dog's face. At that moment, I noticed something new. His ears were pointed and fuzzy all over. It was like a fine, dark fur covering his skin. It made me feel sick. I was so sick I almost didn't want to eat, but I was so hungry that I quickly ate the small meal. After the meal, I was tired and had a nap. Later in the afternoon, I woke up and heard a voice call out. At the same time, I heard the door unlock and Montgomery came in. I realized two things. Firstly, I realized that the door had been locked and I was a prisoner in this room. The other thing that I realized was that as Montgomery called out to the other gentleman, he called him by name, and that name was Moreau.
"Moreau?"
I whispered to myself. As Montgomery walked around the room, I thought about the name Moreau. It had been about 10 years ago when I had heard the name Moreau. It is an unusual name and easy to remember, but it was the story of the man himself which had a stronger memory. I'd read the information in a pamphlet. The article had been titled "The Moreau Horrors." The infamous Dr. Moreau had been a physiologist. He had to leave London because of his experiments involving gruesome animal vivisections. At the time, I didn't know the word vivisection.
I learned that it meant performing painful surgeries on live animals. I thought about this information carefully. With a terrible realization, I remembered the animals in the crates, the hounds, the llama and the puma. What would happen to them? Had these exotic animals been shipped to this little island for Dr. Moreau to perform his operations? Were they going to be the victims of his experiments? And how did this link with the strange, animal-like appearances of the islanders like Emling and the other strange men? At this point, it felt like 100 different thoughts were whizzing around in my head. I couldn't make sense of any of them and didn't dare say them aloud. Montgomery was busy in the room for a while. He didn't chat with me, so I sat alone with my thoughts. I spent some time looking at the books on his bookshelf. They were mostly works of non-fiction in the field of biology, but there were a few I might read. I'd certainly have the time. I reminded myself that whenever I got bored on the island, I should remember that I was lucky to be alive. After a while, Montgomery sat down with me. Emling appeared at the door with another light meal as if by magic. "Lunchtime," Montgomery said. I'd lost all idea of days and time. I was still feeling unsettled from the trouble I'd experienced, but I gladly accepted another meal. It would help to make up for my recent near starvation. I doubted the fear of hunger would ever leave me for as long as I lived. Again, I noticed Emling's strange ears when he gave me the food tray. Once he had left the room, I asked Montgomery about it. "Oh, really?" he said as if he wasn't interested at all. He didn't even look up from his food. "You haven't noticed? His ears are pointed and furry, like that of an animal," I said. I couldn't quite believe that Montgomery hadn't seen his ears. "Yes, I suppose he is an ugly fellow," he shrugged. He didn't appear to have anything else to say about it. "But where's he from?" I asked. "Emling?" "Oh, Montgomery scratched the back of his head as if trying to remember. "Let me see. I can't remember where he said he came from, but I know he joined the crew in San Francisco." "Yes, that's it. But don't you think it's odd? There are similarities between him and those others," I said, nodding in the direction of the beach where we'd seen the tall, brown-faced men. "Surely they must come from a similar place? Apart from yourself and Dr. Moreau, all those other men are odd and strangely shaped. How did you know the doctor's name?" Montgomery interrupted me, and his voice sounded annoyed. "When you came into the room, I heard you call him," I explained. "Oh, I see," Montgomery said. He didn't mention Moreau again, and he didn't reply to my comment about the strange islanders either. I decided not to mention it again. We ate in silence, which was soon interrupted by a terrible noise, a cry of pain. "What was that?" I cried, jumping up. Another noise came, recognizable as a feline roar. I was sure it was the puma. Montgomery said nothing but reached over for a glass bottle of whiskey. He poured a generous amount into his cup. "Have some of this," he said, offering me the bottle. "It will help." "I don't drink," I said. "It helps with the noise," he said and gulped. All went quiet. We finished our meal in silence. Once Montgomery had emptied his cup, he called out for Emling. The servant took away our trays, and Montgomery left the room. I noticed that as he went out, there was no click of the lock. I took a book off the shelf and laid down on the bed. It wasn't a very interesting book, but I wanted something to make me forget all I had experienced. As the afternoon went by, the painful cries of the puma continued. At first, it was just occasionally, but the noises became more frequent later. They also became more frantic. I couldn't read the book. I couldn't concentrate on anything at all, not with those cries of terror. I tried anything to distract myself. I walked around the room, clenched my fists and bit my lip, but nothing worked. Those terrible sounds became all I could think about. I tried pushing my fingers into my ears to block the sound. It didn't help. In a panic, I ran to the door and tried the handle. It worked. The door swung open, and I stepped outside. I could still hear the puma. In fact, the sound was even worse. But I didn't want to go back into that room and be surrounded by that sound again. I ran into the forest.